On this week's episode of the We Don't Know Either podcast, we have a very special guest, National Geographic explorer and frog expert Jonathan Colby joins the show.
Thanks. I'm happy to be here.
We are going to get along so well, Jonathan, and I'm excited about it.
I told you so.
Yes. But first, a word from our sponsor, which this week actually is ourselves. We Don't Know Either wrote a book, and it has trivia and great facts in it. We Don't Know Either. Check it out. It's available on Amazon right now and at your local bookstore.
So thanks for joining, and we hope you enjoy today's show.
Enjoy the show, everybody. Hello, everybody, and welcome into episode number 318 of the We Don't Know Either podcast. I'm Lindsay.
I'm Nick.
I'm Michael.
I'm Jonathan.
Jonathan, welcome in.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're kind of a big deal.
Am I?
Yeah, like I would argue. I mean, this we've had a lot of great hosts and great guests on here, but you actually know stuff. So the podcast is called We Don't Know Either, and you do know. So I'm a little just nervous because you're the expert. And what tell the people what you're an expert in?
So I'm an expert in frogs, and I study wildlife disease, and I run the Honduras Amphibian Rescue and Conservation Project, where we're racing to save frogs from extinction.
Yeah, that's a very noble mission. And also, Jonathan is a National Geographic explorer. We're partnered with National Geographic Society, so we're so thankful to have you here. And I think that we need to start off with a reference to last week, because we were talking about specifically animal farts. And we thought we were talking about frog farts specifically. Now we have a frog expert in the room. Can you confirm or deny? I want to know more about frog farting. I think we all do. I don't want to speak for you.
This is
and
such
Michael.
A highbrow podcast.
We warned you.
So I've had a little bit of experience with frog farting. Not myself, but indirectly through the frog. A lot of the work that I do is studying diseases of amphibians. And one of the diseases specifically that requires contact with the back end of a frog is called rhinovirus. Oh. And you know, normally for some of the diseases I study, we sample them by swabbing their skin. But for rhinovirus, you need a better, fresher sample.
So and inside.
You got to go inside.
Yeah.
You know, which requires a delicate cloacal swab. Mm. And, you know, if the frog's got some stuff backed up in there, you're likely to get a bit more than you asked for.
Hey, Lindsay.
Yes.
Can you say that word?
No, 0% chance I can say that. So can you confirm that the sphincters are weak or are they strong? Like, what's your theory as someone who has that experience?
I've encountered a lot of really strong sphincters.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So we were generalizing when we said that about frogs last week, and I would like to personally apologize for stereotyping right. The entire frog sphincter community.
We got so many emails about that from people just telling us how wrong we were about frogs.
Emails from frogs themselves.
From frogs themselves that were very upset and adamant about the community. So we, you know, we constantly issue corrections of things that we got wrong on previous episodes. This time we brought in an expert.
Yeah. So I know that you are trying to save the frog species. Cause
a specific frog species.
All of the frog species. You want, you're pro frog.
I'm pro frog. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Salamander too. I mean, let's not leave them out. There's even some Sicilians mixed in.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like the islanders?
People? No, not people from Sicily. Okay. I'm sure. I'm certain.
Nobody wants to save them. No, they're off. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So what can the average Joe Schmo do to help repopulate or help save the frogs? What can the average person do?
The average person can help by not releasing your pet frogs into the wild if you get bored or tired of them. That's a very common way that invasive species spread and also carry their diseases. So it's better to do your homework before you get a pet to know that you can handle it. Also, you can help support governments in regulating things like the wildlife trade and encouraging people to be wary of the spread of diseases.
Okay, here's a follow-up question. So when I was in high school, there was a kid that swallowed a live salamander for $5. What should we have told him at the time? I was not involved in this, but I think that if he wants to right the wrong that he did back then, this was a rumor. I haven't stopped thinking about this any time that salamanders have come up.
Since you were 5 years old?
No. Since this was like high school.
Okay.
And he like came back and the was like, I swallowed a salamander for $5. And it still makes
me
uncomfortable.
He was that kid, wasn't he?
He was. Yeah. I had to delete him from Facebook for a whole litany of reasons. So what can he do to really reverse this dark time in his life. Because he's
better
he's,
asking price next time, I think. Is the
step one.
I think what he can do to give back to the salamander community is he could build a frog pond in his backyard.
Mm, good.
There's a lot of habitat destruction going on these days, and you know, a popular thing is people in their gardens having a little kiddie pool with rocks and plants and little habitat going on, and I think they'd appreciate that.
For him, that could be like a farm to table though situation. I'm sorry, a pond to table situation. Yeah. Okay, I'm sorry. That was disgusting. I mean, you needed to know that.
Own, you know. Hey,
I would think at the very minimum he should donate at least $5 to Frog Rescue.
Very much so.
At least. Frogrescue.com.
That's where we are.
Frogrescue.com. We will make sure we will put that in the link dump. But we want to get into interesting facts because we want to stump you a little bit. We did not go really into your field of expertise because, honestly, I've known you for a few hours now, and you're going to know everything. But, Nick, I would like you to kick us off and go first here.
Right, yeah. I originally had a frog fact, and then I'm like, you know what? I hate it when people try to stump me on my own stuff because I don't want to look dumb. So I didn't go in that direction. I went in a different direction. I went with cars.
Oh, well, then I'm out.
Yeah,
see you.
Specifically, car safety.
Wait, you did this the other week, didn't you? This has been
did
a theme
I do car
for you.
Safety the other week?
You did. Like,
what
yeah.
was the fact?
It was about deaths in cars.
Yeah, you're right.
Zero deaths in
right, specific kind of cars. I guess I keep going back to the same websites, so forgive me for that. But the seatbelt, we are all aware of seatbelts.
I've heard of them. Mm-hmm. No,
yes.
I wear them
They're
constantly.
Good.
Wear
They're
your seatbelt.
Yeah, all the time.
Saved lives.
It's the law.
Well, and also it saves your lives. I would not be here if I wasn't wearing a seatbelt, but anyway, that's regardless.
Click it or ticket. That's the thing, right?
Click it or ticket.
So the inventor of the three-point safety belt was an automotive maker. Mm-hmm. Okay. That automotive maker, after patenting and doing everything they did with the seatbelt, decided, you know what? This is not something we should be making money off of. This is something we should give away to the public in general in order to have every car have these in it so it saves lives. Mm-hmm. What company invented the three-point seatbelt?
Jonathan, would you like to take a stab at this guess first?
Sure. I know nothing about cars, so I'm going to say Ford.
Ford? That's a good
because
guess.
Because why not?
It's Ford's definitely a car, too.
Yeah,
so.
Like Ford.
Yeah.
And it's a company. They exist.
They make lots of cars.
You're already better than half of Michael's guesses.
It's good to be back.
Michael, you got a guess?
Ford was sounding pretty good. To be honest, I was thinking maybe more of potentially one of the German companies. So I was thinking like Volkswagen.
Okay.
Why? Why not Ford?
Because Jonathan took Ford. So I had to come up with a different guess. I can't just piggyback the expert.
Are you suggesting they're more responsible?
The Germans?
Yeah.
I don't know about that.
I definitely think historically that's not a good leg to stand on.
Okay, I would also have guessed Ford. I think that's a great guess because when you're talking about like early cars, that would make sense. And also, I don't know a lot of other car companies.
What do you drive?
A Mazda, but I think that's definitely wrong because I think they're a newer company and they're chronological time of cars. Wait, chronological time. No, you know what I mean. Right. But I'm going to just say Toyota.
Okay.
Because that was the answer the other week.
Okay. So the that is correct. The good news is all three of you answered actual car companies.
Woo! Good job, guys. High fives.
None of you are correct. Which car company is most known for its safety? Do you know that? Like colloquially.
Nissan? Is that a car?
Nissan is a car, but that's not. It's Volvo.
Volvo,
yeah, known for their safety. Volvo invented the three-point safety belt system, and Volvo, after patenting it, went, you know what? Let's give this away to everybody.
Good for you,
Volvo.
So they
voided their patent and gave the specifications to anybody who wanted it.
You go, Volvo.
Right?
I was thinking you go, Glen Coco, but it didn't quite work. Working on it.
I got hit by a Volvo recently. They're pretty sturdy cars.
Hope you're okay.
Did you feel safe?
In my Honda, not so much.
What year was this? Did all the seatbelt this go down? Like, when was that patented?
Oh, I knew you were going to. 1959. Boom.
Yeah. Wow. That's later than I thought, honestly.
Yep.
Cool.
It made its way to the U.S. in 1963.
Nice.
And the guy who invented it worked for Volvo until 1985.
Wow. Good for that guy.
Yeah.
That wasn't that long ago.
No, it really wasn't.
I got to ask my grandparents if they remember days without seatbelts. Cool. Michael, you got a little segue from Nick's cars to your fact. Let's see it.
Absolutely. So if you are driving in a car, you absolutely should never, ever drink.
That is correct.
Great job.
So my fact's about bourbon.
All right.
Ooh, nice segue.
That was the best I could do. So it's a pretty straightforward question, just straight down the middle. As of the end of 2018, how many barrels of bourbon are currently aging or maturing in Kentucky?
Whoa. Okay, I know nothing. This is back to back. I know nothing about. I like bourbon.
To give you some perspective, Kentucky produces about 95% of the world's bourbon.
95%.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's like 85%.
Anything distilled outside of the U.S. is not allowed to be called bourbon. So bourbon has to be made in the United States, which is why it's Congress actually recognized it in 1964 as America's only native spirit.
Oh, that makes sense.
Hmm. Wow, the more you know.
But 95% of it is made in Kentucky.
That's amazing.
Cool. That would have been
the whole world supply is here.
That would have been a very good question and fact to ask, and I'm still thinking about how great that is. That I forgot your original question.
So, how many barrels are currently aging in Kentucky?
Jonathan, what do you think? Do you know anything about bourbons?
I don't. I'm going to ask the question back to your question.
Sure.
Do you know approximately how long they have to age for before they go out?
It depends on the bourbon, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's various ages.
Yeah.
Oh, so it's a answer to a question with a question.
Yeah,
a
question. It's like there's 5 year age and 10 year age and 15 year age.
All right. Well, then I'm going to say it's definitely about 350,000 barrels.
Okay.
It's a good number.
Definitely.
How much is in a barrel?
Barrels worth.
A barrel is 55 gallons.
Thanks,
55
Jonathan.
Gallons, I want to say.
Yeah.
You do know stuff. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I don't even know how much. I would need to know how much bourbon is consumed, and then how much is in a barrel, and then they're prepped for.
You're asking for a lot.
How much does the average person drink? What's the average population of the world?
Yeah. Well, I don't. I feel like bourbon is most popular in America because that's where it's from and easily shipped from. I don't think that. Like, I'm not really going to Italy and getting bourbon. Maybe I am. I don't know. Well, you can't because it wouldn't be. We get it. Okay, I have no idea of where to even begin to guess on this, so I will say 2 million barrels.
Okay. Ooh. Okay.
That's a lot.
Like Lindsay, I know nothing about this. However,
did you Google it quick while I was talking?
I did not. I did, however, watch the entirety of Top Chef this most recent season.
Ooh.
Interesting.
Which took place in Kentucky.
Ooh.
Oh.
So I did get a statistic from Padma. Where I believe the answer is just under 5.5 million barrels.
Okay.
So my guess is 5.3 million barrels.
Okay. Wow. This is actually coming from the Kentucky Distillers Association.
Okay.
So I'm calling them a pretty solid source on this.
Sure.
Yeah.
As of the end of 2018, 7.5 million
Ooh.
Barrels
wow.
currently
Ooh.
Aging.
They taped Kentucky. The episode, I'm sure, slightly before.
Mm. Sure. Yeah. It is a new record. To put that in a little bit of perspective, there are 4.3 million people in Kentucky.
Whoa.
So there's 1.5 barrels per or 1.7.
They're 1. Just 7. A little shy of 2 barrels per person of aging bourbon.
So 110 gallons per person.
Jonathan, you're officially now a regular on the We Don't Know Either podcast because your guess was wildly off. Congratulations. We're proud of you.
Well, welcome
Thank
to the team.
You.
We
Thank
got
you.
T-shirts on the way out.
Yeah.
I felt really confident, though. Like, does that count?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that actually comes with it.
That is by far the most important part of knowing anything is how confident you are in your answer.
Confidently wrong.
Yes. Yeah. Correct, incorrect, secondary. Confidence is key.
Good. Yeah. So now, Jonathan, we're going to even put you more on the spot. So I knew that your fact was about frogs because you told me that your fact was about frogs. I was like, oh, that's the least surprising thing I've ever heard. So Michael has his fact about bourbon. Your fact is about frogs. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to throw it to you to make the segue. Godspeed,
right.
sir.
Well, you know, you're going to need a stiff drink to hear the answer to this one. It's not as pleasurable.
Well
what?
Done.
Solid.
What? Disease has caused the most number of species extinctions in the world in recorded history.
Whoa.
It's a bit sobering. It's a bit sobering to think about.
Yeah. Whoa. Okay. So this is a disease that is applying to frogs specifically or
no, I'm not
just
gonna,
all?
I'm not going to give you more. Like what disease period for any living organism
Ooh.
Has caused the most extinctions?
Yeah.
Most extinctions of species.
Yes.
Okay. Man. Wow.
Is it something that Lindsay will be easily able to pronounce?
I can pronounce it easily.
That didn't answer my question.
I've heard many different pronunciations of this word.
Okay.
Is it something that the common person would have heard about? Or is this specific
to
your
field? They should have.
They should have.
I mean, this many extinctions.
I mean, hey, everything's dying.
If they went to frogrescue.com, would they have heard about this?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, so what diseases do you guys know?
There's like the influenza and things along those lines, but those are all
human related.
Most of the diseases I know are human related. Most of the animal diseases I know are bacterial growth, like fungus growth related. Mm-hmm. So I would guess it's some kind of fungus. But I can't name.
You know the answer.
Yeah,
you're playing coy over here.
I can't name a specific kind of fungus outside of like a mushroom. But yeah, that's probably not it.
And part B is how many species are we talking about?
Okay.
Oh, man. Michael, do you have any guesses?
Not even a little bit.
Not even a little bit.
I mean, I can name one thing that did lead to a mass extinction, but I don't know if disease is the right term for meteors. So
I like that's thinking outside the box. I like that.
It's a sky disease.
Yeah.
Planetary.
Falling rocks. Does that count? Mm. What branch of medicine does that fall under?
Catastrophe.
I almost want to say like some sort of cancer or something like that due to contamination. Mm.
Mm. Okay, so some form of carcinogen?
Exactly.
Oh, okay.
I like that.
Yeah. Are they all wrong?
You'll hear when you hear. You haven't guessed yet.
I know. I feel like though I have an advantage in the sense that you may not believe this, did do some research and preparation for this
podcast.
You
read frogrescue.com?
I did frogrescue.com. I also Googled pretty furiously about your research, so I know the name of this particular frog fungus.
It is a fungus.
It is a fungus. Hey. You're right. I think you were right. Was you right?
Yes.
So I can try to pronounce it.
Go for it.
Okay, let's see. Here we go. Dun 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 dun. This is spelled, for those of you at home that want to try to guess with me, C-H-Y-T-R-I-D. And I'm going to say Trichrid fungus. That's what my guess is. Trichrid fungus.
Chytrid.
Chytrid. Oh, okay.
I've heard chytrid, chytrid, which is hard for me to say, but okay. It's chytrid.
It's actually pronounced Krzyzewski.
Chytrid. Okay.
Yeah.
So tell us more about, is this the answer?
That is the answer.
Oh. Ding, ding, ding.
Amphibian chytrid fungus.
Well, this might be the first time in We Don't Know Either history that research actually got an answer right.
It's also maybe the first time we've done research. So.
Okay. So tell us more about this and why it's important and why we should care about it.
So, you know, when we think about disease, people normally think about things like AIDS and influenza and smallpox and all these horrible, horrific diseases that people have suffered that have killed millions and millions of people. But in terms of biodiversity, you know, we're still talking about one species. Mm-hmm. And in the world of plants and animals, you know, now we have this thing called amphibian chytrid fungus, which is the first time we've had a single pathogen. You know, the pathogen causes disease. So a single pathogen that knows no boundaries within an entire class of organisms. So that's almost akin to saying that a flu that gives you the sniffles, you could cough onto a blue whale
and the blue whale would get sick
and sneeze onto a mouse and kill it.
Yeah.
Mammals. And there's only about, you know, 5,500 species of mammals. For amphibians, there's about 7,000, close to 8,000 species of amphibians in the class Amphibia.
Okay.
And this one pathogen called amphibian chytrid fungus can potentially infect any one of those and potentially kill any one of those to the point of extinction.
So it's ubiquitous.
Wow. It's ubiquitous.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's certainly exceptions. There are some Typhoid Mary species.
Sure.
That, you know, are kind of ironclad. But yes. Is there a question in the room?
Well, I raised my hand because the American bullfrog is not susceptible to the chytrid fungus.
I'm very glad you said that, because that is a very important caveat. So that is almost why things are worse, right? Some people think, oh, well, at least not everything dies from a disease, and that's awesome.
Yeah, but all but one thing is bad, yeah.
But yeah, too much of any one thing is a bad thing, and too many bullfrogs is a bad thing, too.
I don't know. His bourbon kind of contradicts your too much of something is a bad thing.
But yeah, so since you've got American bullfrogs that catch this disease quite easily but don't die from it, they're also an invasive species in other parts of the world and in other parts of the United States. So they just hop along spreading chytrid and everything else dies.
I'm pretty sure that was the entire thematic arc of a Simpsons episode, wasn't it?
Yeah.
The American bullfrog being introduced into the Australia?
Yeah, that was a good episode. That was really good.
This is me dating myself with a 20-year-old Simpsons
episode. No, I know
episode.
Exactly that episode. It's a very good episode, and I learned a lot. So this is, I feel like, falls into one of those categories that I didn't know that this was a problem, but now that I do,
you're sad.
I'm really upset about it.
Yeah. So it should be.
it's your fault, Lindsay. So the disease.
I didn't stop. I didn't stop him before that salamander. You know, like right. I didn't stop.
You didn't
him.
Save the salamander.
I wasn't. It was too late.
It's always there's time to make up for your past mistakes.
I know. Frogrescue.com.
Yep. That's I had something, but I forgot what it was. So.
Oh, sorry. You got distracted.
Were going to talk about how weird and crazy this fungus is because it's almost like a zombie.
It swims
in the water.
Okay.
Oh. It has a tail. Okay. Like one little flagellum. Oh. So it's not a plant. It's not an animal. It's a weird fungus, but it can swim.
Oh. Like is it sentient? Is it out to get the frogs?
What
did the frogs do to the fungus?
I mean,
some funguses just want to watch the world burn.
Yeah.
No. And, yeah. Pretty much. Yeah.
And that is going to be that is going to be your secret phrase. Some funguses want to watch the world burn.
Just want to watch the world burn.
Just want to watch the world burn.
In all seriousness, I heard a theory once years and years ago. I went to a conference about emerging fungal diseases and how more and more of these weird, crazy, ancient fungal things are popping up.
It's a huge kegger, that conference.
It is.
Right?
Yeah. It was great. Everyone left really depressed. Yeah. And what I found fascinating was one of the speakers even spoke about an alternative theory about the extinction of dinosaurs being due to fungal disease.
Oh.
That sure, there was this big asteroid, meteor,
right,
you know,
ice
boom,
age,
everything
yeah.
sucks. But that, you know, at the same time, you have this sweet spot in climate and moisture for diseases to flourish.
Sure.
And you have all these animals that can't thermoregulate on their own. And can suddenly their insides be invaded by these fungal pathogens.
Right. Yeah.
And that maybe that's what made the dinosaurs extinct.
Okay. I can see that.
So look out. They're coming. They're coming again.
So this is a Hatfield-McCoy thing. Years ago, frogs did something to the fungus, and now the fungus is
well, no, actually, revenge. Actually, it is our fault. Going back to you were saying it was Lindsay's fault. I mean, it's kind of true.
Oh, it's people's fault. It's my fault.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this fungus has existed for a very, very long time. So the question is, well, why now is it killing frogs?
Right, because this is a big spike and uptick, right? Like
around the 60s, 70s is when things really started getting bad. No one really realized it was a disease. We just kind of knocked it off to habitat destruction, climate change, pollution, because all those things are bad and they're happening and we see them and we're like, yeah, that sucks.
We should probably not do that.
Yeah, but it wasn't until the late 90s that everyone kind of put their heads together around the world. They were like, wait, are your frogs dying too? Mine are dying too. And yours are dying too.
Right.
This sounds like
this
a wave of
issue.
Disease.
Yeah.
Oh.
And
an epidemic,
then,
right?
A global pandemic, if you will.
Oh, yeah.
By then, it was already in several dozen countries before we knew it.
Oh, wow.
But back to the question of, well, why now are things dying? It's because it was around the 60s or 70s, we believe, that it hybridized. It was around forever, all
right.
over the world, but it had mutated into regional strains. But then through human activity, we brought it across oceans again.
Got it.
And then this is what's neat, because it's clonal. So chytrid clones itself.
Ugh.
But once in a while, it could do weird stuff when no one's watching. Mm-hmm. And it sexually recombines.
Whoa.
And that's when you get these weird, crazy hybrid offspring. And that's what this strain is,
right.
which is the global one that's killing everything. It's just super deadly and super weird.
So everything geographically separated. Then because of the geographic separation, all of the local species adapted to it.
Yes.
And then with the cross-contamination with people moving stuff mm-hmm. from continent to continent,
yep.
and the combination of the this one with the that one, mm-hmm. that created something new that nobody was immune to.
Exactly.
Got
so
it.
This is a zombie fungus that can swim and clone itself and mutate itself.
Yes.
Okay. Right. I honestly would watch that action movie of this fungus versus frogs.
So
I would watch
it's like Alien versus Predator, but entertaining.
Some fungus just want to watch the world burn.
Right.
Yeah, no, we talk about that often in the science world, that you know what, like you're all making up these fake entertaining movies, but like look at nature. Like that shit's crazy.
Yeah, way better story.
Like nature's already doing it.
I think the most important question here and the thing that all of our listeners would most want to know about the whole thing. You said this is invasive amongst all 7,000 amphibian species.
Yeah.
But not mammals.
Not yet.
All right.
give it time is what I'm hearing.
It's temperature sensitive.
Okay.
So on your skin, if you had chytrid on your skin, it would probably die in like 5 or 10 minutes. It can't take the heat.
Okay.
But interestingly, if you take some of the properties of chytrid, so chytrid releases some weird chemical into its surroundings, which shuts off the immune system of a frog.
Okay.
And a while back, a study, I believe, took whatever this chemical is. We still don't know what it is. But if you soak chytrid, you could take some of that juice and it was injected into like a petri dish of mouse blood, and it had the same effect on the mouse blood cells,
all right,
hiding from it that, hey, I'm not here. Don't give me an immune response.
Okay, so what so I would like to say...
A few more mutations, and you got to look out.
Yeah, what I'd like to say is frogrescue.com, go damn it.
Yes.
Because the fate of the world is at stake. The whole human race is on the line here, people.
Yeah, the end starts with the frogs.
Right.
Every day in my old age, I'm discovering something to be more afraid of.
Yeah.
There's so many things lurking out there. Everything. Like the zombie clone mutated frog fungus.
There's legitimately the zombie fungus that like controls cordyceps.
That's mind blowing.
Yeah.
Hey. Oh my gosh, he fits in so well. I am so proud. This is how you guys feel when I make a good frog all the time. Yeah. Oh, uh-huh.
I've been restraining because otherwise my friends will just roll their eyes right now.
Hi, friends. I love it.
All right, Lindsay, your fact.
Yes, my fact. It is actually mammal related, so my segue is very easy because I knew you were a frog and amphibian guy, so I was like, it's animal related, but it's mammal a bit. This is according to a specific study, so maybe you have information that it might be wrong, but I don't know. I'm going to cite this specific thing. So an article was published in Ecology and Evolution a year or two ago that was talking about how many species of mammals were still left to be discovered, right? Because species are getting discovered constantly.
This is my problem with science. You can't prove a negative.
Well, they estimated it. They did a bunch of research I don't want to go super into this specific study because I am not a scientist, nor will I ever pretend to be, in how they estimated based on certain species in certain regions and where those regions were in the world and the rate of blah, blah, blah. I don't know. It was pretty interesting. So I would like to know how many species does this particular study, it's out of the University of Georgia, estimate are left to be discovered? So how many mammal species specifically? Because I think mammals in general are like bigger than, other things.
More important to me, personally. At least one of the mammal species.
Yeah. So that was my question how many? And you actually gave some information that would be helpful in figuring this out earlier.
5,500 mammal species.
Yeah, because I actually had that. I had that follow-up right there. Yeah. So have at it. Michael, you haven't talked in a while.
I haven't, because I am so out of my depth and element with today's podcast. I showed up with a bourbon pack. And
have some more bourbon.
Now I'm just going through, like, there's this fungus, and it's just like, I'm not.
You're going to spend the rest of the day
on frogrescue.com.
looking up zombie funguses.
So number of mammal species that they estimate haven't been discovered yet but are still out there.
Yes, this is what they're estimating. Have many yet to be discovered?
So, well, there's Bigfoot.
Yeah, obviously
no,
that's
we already had that. He's on the discovered list. That's fine.
Yeah. Yeah, pull up that Wikipedia page. Let me know.
Bigfoot,
what you say.
Sasquatch, Yeti.
Are those different species?
I was going to ask.
I don't know.
I don't know. Hey, biologists, are they different species?
I think they're subspecies.
Subspecies,
if
okay.
You will.
Would this be cryptozoology or cryptobiology?
Yes.
So when, and this is a follow up question that I'm asking you in my interesting fact. So when folks go out and they discover a new species, is there like somebody that's like, yeah, it's confirmed as a species, and you get like a ribbon and it's certified? Like, how do you or can I just be like, this is definitely a new bug? Like, how does that process work?
It does vary a bit. I mean, technically, you'll describe a species based on a combination of morphological differences. So does it look different? Does it have different body parts or hairs or whatnot?
Yeah. But then, how strong its sphincter is, yeah.
How strong the sphincter is. But then, especially nowadays, as technology advances, we're held to higher and higher standards, which is usually ending up in genetics. So, it can't just look different, but you have to show that it is different on the inside. Then together you can publish it and then get your trophy.
Is it a trophy?
Yeah, you have to publish.
Okay. Do you really get something? Is it a trophy? Is it a ribbon?
No.
It's usually not. It's
a big gold brick.
Right.
A gold brick.
Well, no, you get to name the new species.
Okay.
Right. You do.
Have you discovered any species of frog?
I haven't discovered a new one, but I rediscovered one that was said to be extinct.
Okay.
So I unextincted.
That's a thing.
Okay, that's actually really cool.
So when you discovered this, did you look at it and you were like, wait, hey?
Yeah. No, we had a moment. We had a moment because it was in Honduras at my study site in Honduras. And it was the second year I'd gone there when I was finally starting to figure out what these things were that I was seeing the year before. It's like, oh, that's a funny red frog. So by then I had a pretty good understanding of what's common and what's not. And then long story short, I had a bunch of school kids out on an interpretive walk one night, and I saw this frog. Super weird, super different. I didn't know what it was, but I knew it was important because it wasn't in the books.
Oh.
And I figured, hey, now's a great time for show and tell, right? Like, right. I'll just show these kids how you catch a frog because that's what I do. And it was the biggest, like, slop in the mud. Just dive down and, you know, hey, here it is. And it right. literally was a handful of mud. And I freaked out because I knew what I just lost was important. And I couldn't even talk to them. I was just on hands and knees for a good 30
Looking
minutes.
For the damn frog.
It's 11 o'clock at night. They're tired, so disinterested.
Right.
And they're like, what's wrong with this guy? Why is he crawling around in the mud for a stupid brown frog? And it got away. So 1 year later, I had one chance on one night to go back to that same place. And I kid you not, that frog was sitting on the same rock.
Was it the same frog? Was it Bob?
It was. No, I think Bob it was. Frog. It yeah. was. I didn't think so at first until afterwards. Some people were like, oh, that kind of frog is a little bit territorial. Like,
right.
you might have caught the same frog. And I was like, is that possible? And they're like, yeah, totally. I was like, well, then I did because it was on the same tiny rock.
See, that's
oh my gosh,
that's amazing, because I always think it's interesting that, like, so we collectively as a company have, like, corrected the National Archives. We're
yeah.
like, this fact is disparate with what they have over here in the Library of Congress, so one of you is wrong. And
figure it out, we need
yeah,
to know.
Figure it out, because we need to know which one's right. And they, well, you know, they corrected it and it was right. You unextincted a species. That
I
is
mean,
so much more impressive than
I mean,
like,
as you say that, I enjoy when people say that,
sure.
but my scientific colleagues are probably sighing right now on how scientifically inaccurate that is, that I haven't actually brought it back to life.
No, I understand
that. But I have
that.
Declared that it is still in our world.
Sure, but that's
which is exciting.
It amounts to the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, especially when you're in the business of saying things are extinct.
Right.
You don't often expect to be able to say that something is actually not extinct.
Right. I mean, if you showed up with a dinosaur and you're like, hey, I got this dinosaur, you unextincted dinosaurs.
That is
That's
true.
How that works.
Well, except that birds are living dinosaurs.
Sure.
So
oh.
they are amongst us.
They live amongst us. Oh, man. What? That's right. Like a plot twist.
So, Lindsay.
Oh, yes.
You said the number of undiscovered
mammal?
Mammalic. Species?
I don't know if that's
mammalian?
A word. Is that a word?
Mammalian Mammalic? Species. Thank you.
Yeah.
Mammalian
so the number of undiscovered mammal species left
right.
on Earth.
I'm going to say 100.
That's a good guess.
Nick?
I'm going to say it's like 5% of the total. So what is that? Like 275? Sure. Let's go with that. 275.
Jonathan?
I'm going to say 400.
400. Okay.
And I'm going to say most of them are mice.
That's a good idea. A couple of bats here and there.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
So Nick and Jonathan are very close. Jonathan, I'm upset to tell you that we do play Price is Right rules. So Nick does
hey.
Win. So they said 303 species of mammals they estimate to still left to be discovered. So 303 right. species left to be discovered. How many would you estimate, you know, think frog species?
How many frogs left?
Yeah.
So right now, current estimates are just about at the tip of 8,000 known. Mm-hmm. I would say there's probably at least 1,000 more.
I was going to say, wow, you're probably 1, at about 51%.
Yeah. Yeah. And especially because of genetic techniques. And that's like the big eye-opening thing right now is we're discovering that, you know, back in the day, everything was based on morphology.
Right.
And like we put them into boxes because that's what they look like.
Right.
And now when people start looking at some of these common widespread species and realizing, oh crap, this is actually 7 species.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, so one species is really 7.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're seeing that more and more. Which actually is really important to know. Like on one hand it's kinda like annoying. It's like, oh, you mean that toad is now 8 new names that I have to remember? But
right.
from a conservation perspective, it matters for how many species do I have to worry about protecting.
Sure.
And that could be a different thing for each of those 7.
Yeah.
The flip side of that argument though is how important each species is individually, because if it's 3% of the entire amphibian population, that's a lot. But
yeah.
if that now gets divided to 56,000 because mm-hmm. everything is 7 things,
yeah,
and now it's like
1%.
And
speaking of numbers, I now just realized I didn't answer part B to my own question for you guys.
Okay.
Because how many species we're losing to chytrid fungus?
Oh yeah.
And just yesterday, we had a big paper published in Science giving those numbers. And we have been able to evaluate that 500 species have severely declined specifically because of chytrid fungus. And of those, at least 90 are now extinct the past 50 years from chytrid. So it's not good news.
So screw you, chytrid.
And that's conservative. That's
right.
just the stuff that we knew well enough to say.
Sure.
So how are you, as we conclude, because we're over time, but you're awesome, so I'm fine with it. So how are you guys preventing this spread of the disease? How are you combating this zombie mutant clone man disease?
Orange
fungus.
Cones and the yellow tape that they put yeah. out. So.
Contagion.
Flares.
lots of Purell.
And I understand
lots
that.
Lots of Purell. Just, can we aerosolize Purell over the entire yeah. planet?
Yeah, and I understand that that is not a very simple question that I'm asking, but just, you know, the 1,000-degree view.
In 30 seconds or
yeah,
less.
In 30 yeah. seconds or less, government policy that, you know, climate change, deforestation, everything else is making it worse right now for animals that are already struggling with the disease. But at the end of the disease, at the end of the day, the reason the disease is still spreading is because we're moving it through the pet trade and food trade, and there's nothing stopping that in most countries. So hopefully this is a call to action and a really good slap in the face that frogs matter and we're losing them, and that people will start to take notice.
Well, yeah. Guess what? This podcast is mainly consumed in Washington, D.C., and I'm sure there's a couple of people out there that make policy. So frogrescue.com.
Yeah, so last question of the day. Why do frogs matter? Why do we care? Why should that guy feel so bad that he swallowed that salamander? I also know that salamanders aren't frogs, but, you know, why? Yeah.
So I've got a specific reason and a more, like, philosophical reason.
All right,
you.
Give me both. Hit
it. All right. So if you're like, why should I care yeah. as a person?
Yeah.
So here we go. So frogs consume a lot of vegetative matter in the water. And if they weren't there, the vegetation would rot and reduce the water quality, which is bad for animals that live in that water, but also bad for people that drink water from these water bodies that don't have access to treatment facilities.
Are there a lot of people that drink water?
I mean, I personally don't. Like, most of my insides right now are coffee, which sure. I guess is mostly water.
That's mostly water, yeah.
But, you know,
beer
I'm not,
too.
I'm not a big fan of water, but many, many people are, and that's uh-huh. important.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so frogs are connected to human health also by the fact that they eat lots of insects. And some of those insects can spread diseases like malaria, dengue, and Zika virus if you live in those regions.
Right.
And also because there's just so many freaking frogs out there, a lot of other animals are eating them.
Right.
So if you take them out of the equation, maybe an animal that you like more would start to disappear because they'd have a harder time finding food. But in a more, like, philosophical stance, I think the real risk, the real issue at hand is not just why do frogs matter, but how do you start to pick and choose what animals we allow to go extinct?
Ooh.
And that's something we don't talk about as often, but that's something we have to worry about every day as conservationists, is there's never enough money or time or space to save everything that needs to be saved. So we are making those decisions. But no one wants to be the one to sign the paperwork and say, you know what, this one we'll just let quietly slip away.
Wait, is that job option available? Because I would take that.
Who goes extinct?
I would swing the hammer of God on species after species and be solely responsible for each one of those at my own discretion.
And be smited because of it, I'm sure.
Yeah, you'd have some following for yeah. and against.
Yeah, definitely.
On every species. But,
right.
But that's the thing, you know, right. it's like, Even I make those decisions. When I say what frogs do I want to raise to the forefront that
right.
I think need help, you know, I'm also
you're
saying
basically
that
saying
all
screw.
These other ones
yeah.
I'm not going to help, and you know they're going to suffer.
You can't do but. It all.
That's really heavy, and really it's an like when you think about that, that makes sense, right? Limited resources, you can only do certain things. That does make sense, but I have never even thought my crossed my mind that was a decision that you guys would have to make, and it's like, whoa, shattering explosion.
Right.
Wow. Well, I think that's a good note to end on.
On that bright note.
Yeah, on the bright note, some fungus just want to watch the world burn.
Right.
Okay, well, Jonathan, thank you so much. Tell everybody where they can find out more about you and your work beside frogrescue.com. Mm-hmm. You're everywhere.
Yeah, you could follow me on Twitter and Instagram at myfrogcroaked. Because that's how I roll.
Nice.
Yeah. And on Facebook, both under my name, Jonathan Colby, and our frog rescue page at the Honduras Amphibian Rescue and Conservation Center. And we just started a new YouTube page yesterday called Reptile and Amphibian Conservation, where we're going to put some fun stuff. Sometimes scary, sometimes fun.
Fun, scary. Oh, the dream. Well, thank you. And thanks to National Geographic Society for letting you come on the podcast today. And this has been the We Don't Know Either podcast. I'm Lindsay.
I'm Nick.
I'm Michael.
I'm Jonathan.
We don't know either.
Bye.